Welcome, everybody, to the Stone Down Sports Podcast. My name is Matt. Really happy to be here with you on this Thursday night. We are going to be continuing our foray into our dynasty tiers and rankings for the 2024 season. Tonight, we're going to be talking about running backs and tight ends. We're going to hit on some news and notes from around the league as well. But before we jump into all of that, I do want to give a big thank you to everybody that comes to hang out with us, watches after the fact. We really appreciate all your support. Kyle, there was a signing. There's a team that we've been waiting on to get a new coach. And I know both you and I have been anxiously awaiting, you know, what exactly was going to happen. And then news broke. Raheem Morris is going to be coaching the Atlanta Falcons.
It's definitely not the one I thought you were going to lead with. You tricked me there, you bastard. I don't understand that one, but he was there before. If you guys remember, he took over as the interim coach there when Dan Quinn was fired. He went 4-7 while he was there, and then the ownership decided to go with Arthur Smith, and they just fired him. So they brought Raheem Morris back. You know, they made a hiring mistake last time, and maybe they should have went with him. So I'm happy that he's got a chance to show what he can do. He's one of the highly respected coaches in this league, coordinators in this league. So see what he can do. Obviously, the big question is who's playing quarterback. So
I think it was a bad hire. Personally, he's another retread, and you find in the NFL that teams get very, very conservative with their coaches. You look at Atlanta, you look at the skill position talent they have, they're a quarterback away, right? At the same time, Raheem Morris isn't somebody who's going to move the needle. He was a DC last year for the Rams, I believe, and they had something like the 20th ranked defense. Like, that doesn't really instill confidence in me at all.
A very young defense.
But he's not somebody that moves the needle. He's not somebody you bring in thinking, all right, this is a dude who's going to get us over the top. He's somebody you bring in thinking, all right, we'll bring in Raheem Morris, and then hopefully, you know, I can get 2 years out of him, and then I'm in the same exact position, you know, after the 2026 season or after the 2027 right. season. I just don't get it. But at the same time, I don't get a vote. Nobody asked my opinion. I had no input on the situation. I'm not saying I would have went with Belichick. I'm just saying, damn, take a chance. Do something. Yeah. I guess there's just people get fine with being mediocre. And hey, it doesn't make any sense to me.
We weren't in the room. We didn't interview him. You don't know. Give him a shot. See how he does. We'll see. Time will tell.
He had a shot as interim head coach and went like 4-7, didn't he?
Yeah, 4-7. But it is what it is. So he's there. They hired him. Joe Barry's out as Packers defensive coordinator. They got rid of him. That's probably a good move. LaFleur's going to be on there as third defensive coordinator in the last six seasons. So they got to fix the run defense there. It was a major issue under Barry. We'll see, because the Packers were 28th against the run, and they were 26th in 2022, so they went backwards.
That's hard 11th. To do when you're 26th.
Yeah, they finished 11th in 2021, so got some issues there. Dave Canales, the Bucs OC, was hired as the Panthers head coach. I guess they're going to see if he can do what he did with Baker this season. I don't see it, but the new general manager there in Atlanta, Dan Morgan, his last name is Morgan. Maybe I think it is Dan Morgan, was with Canales in Seattle when, I think he was just on the staff there, but Canales was the wide receivers coach. So they're familiar with one another. We'll see. He was the passing game coordinator when Russell Wilson went off in 2020 with his 40 touchdowns and 4,200 yards. So we'll see.
Yeah, no kidding. So we got the boys here in the chat. Dubo's in. What's going on, brother? Appreciate you stopping by. We got Blue making an appearance from the Great White North. How you doing, Blue Yays? I'm doing pretty damn good and real happy that all yous could join us. And we got Sway in here making his presence known. Appreciate you. We got a good show lined up for you guys. It's going to be some fun. And I see that that Block M on your chest, obviously.
I was waiting to see if one of these guys are going to bring it up, but they probably think we're kind of sad and salty about it. But go ahead.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh, he's going to be coaching out there in L.A. And, you know, they've got an excellent quarterback in place. There is some talent on the roster. They've not really drafted all that well over the past few years. I didn't really see how much personnel control he's going to get there, but he'll probably bring Jesse Minter with him from Michigan to run the defense, and then his boy Jay on special team. Blue Yays, I see that comment, brother. You're going to be disappointed.
But yeah, we got that coming up. But yeah, Harbaugh out to the Chargers. The Spanos family gave him a 5-year deal. Listen, you know, he came to Michigan to win a natty and restore the program to national prominence again. He did that. You know, thanks, coach. You know,
that's it. I know he's forever.
Yep. I know he's a Michigan man for the rest of his life. And he'll always support us. And, you know, I wish him on his next adventure. I'll be following. I'm interested to see what kind of staff he puts together out there, but returns to the NFL after going to the Super Bowl with the Niners. Do you think that he started as like a grad assistant or whatever with his dad at Western Kentucky, went to San Diego State. I think he was a coordinator or something in the NFL for a second, wasn't he?
Who?
Harbaugh. Anyway, but I think his most impressive stop was Stanford. He really turned that program around. That team was like 1-11 that year before he came. And he took over, and 3 to 4 years later, they were 12-1 that year. And I remember them whooping the shit out of USC. And that it's even more impressive with the super duper academic standards that Stanford has in place.
Oh, for sure. But at the same time, Richard Sherman went to Stanford. So how rigid are those guidelines there?
He's a smart guy. He's actually a smart guy.
Sure. Okay.
Michael Crabtree.
We'll go with that theory. But the reason everybody tuned in tonight, all four of you, is that's right. It's time to talk about running backs, the most fluid position in the NFL. And one thing I want everybody to keep in mind is that, you know, we're going to put our rankings up here, but a lot of stuff is going to change. You're going to have a lot of running backs in new places. You're going to have a lot of teams reshuffling their backfields, bringing dudes in, sending dudes along their way. This is just a preliminary set of rankings, and this is really we'll call it a living document. This is going to evolve as the off season goes on and as we get into, you know, obviously the draft and we get into training camp and closer to the season, we'll have things nailed down a little bit better than we do right now, just because of, you know, it's the end of January.
Yeah, we got, you know, there'll be free agency. Some of these guys that we have ranked might be on different teams or might likely to be on different teams. So the running back dynasty tier, similar how we did it the other night. We got Jahmyr Gibbs at the top, and Blue Yays, we have Zamir White, just to go all the way to the end of the spectrum. And that last tier ranked last at 40th. We'll get to more of that in a minute and our thoughts on that. Me and Matt had a heated discussion this week about where to rank him. So it was pretty good stuff. Again, that stuff's already on the website, stonedonsportspodcast.com. Check her out. We are going to start with Mr. Jahmyr Gibbs with the Detroit Lions. Finished RB10 on the season last year, but just over 16 fantasy points a game. This is PPR. Had over 200 total touches, 1,261 total scrimmage yards. From week 7 to the end of the season, Gibbs was RB4 behind McCaffrey, Rashad White, and Breece Hall. Very good company. I think this says a lot more about Gibbs because those other guys weren't sharing any time in the backfield like Gibbs was. So for context, Montgomery saw 135 total touches and scored 7 times during that same time frame. His 52 receptions on 71 targets just confirmed his ability to be a huge, huge contributor in the passing game for freaking years to come. I think his advanced metrics make him a strong case to be the top dynasty running back. His 2.5 yards per carry per attempt ranks first in the NFL among players with 100 carries this season. He also has 20 broken tackles in the regular season. That ranks 7th among running backs. Monty, of course, does clip his ceiling a bit, especially if Monty has 200 plus carries again like he had this past season. I love Jahmyr Gibbs as the best fantasy dynasty fantasy running back in all the land.
Yeah, and you're not going to get any arguments out of me. You talk about his ability to break tackles. He was 3rd in the league in yards after contact per attempt. He was 2nd in runs over 20 yards. 5.2 yards a carry. Like yeah. you can't ask for more than that out of a rookie. He did get hurt and look, that happens. It comes with a position. He missed a couple games and there's a benefit to him sharing time with Monty and that look, let's be real. That's going to continue into next year, but he's just so damn efficient and he's got a nose for the end zone.
He does. Love him.
Absolutely. So next up, no, not Zamir White. We're going to head to New York. And we're going to talk about Breece Hall. He was a top 5 running back. Overall, he was like the RB8 overall in points per game. He had 6 games over 20 points, 8 games under 15. He was fantastic around their bye in midseason and in the playoffs. He got eased in earlier in the year just because he was coming off that ACL injury. From week 5 onward, he had 54% or more of team carries every week but one. That offensive line needs some work there. But even this year, he showed he could overcome subpar offensive line play. Next year, in theory, Aaron Rodgers is going to be back, and nobody's happier about that than Aaron Rodgers because that narcissist absolutely needs to be in the spotlight. And that's why he was saying all the time he was going to come back from an Achilles injury, which everybody and their brother knew what was not going to happen. But with Rodgers coming back, teams are going to have to respect the pass more than they did with Zach Wilson, who, I mean, that guy is likely going to be out of the league like in the next 48 hours or so. But Breece Hall, fantastic when he came out of Iowa State, and it sucked that he tore his ACL, but he showed, especially towards the end of the year, that it's wheels up. He's ready to go.
Yeah. I'm sure those who missed the buy low window on Breece Hall and dynasty leagues are likely kicking themselves for sure. His yards per carry did drop a full yard since his rookie campaign. But again, like you said, I think that those efficiency issues can be tied to the offensive line, poor quarterback play, and a first season back from the knee injury. But if Aaron Rodgers can truly reform to even being serviceable, you know, get him, you know, run the offense, I don't see why he wouldn't be a top 5 player at the position. So Breece Hall.
He's incredibly explosive. He's one of those dudes that can take it from the house anywhere or take it to the house from anywhere on the field.
Exactly. Moving on to Kyren Williams. Wow. For the Los Angeles Rams, great player last season. Every year in the world of fantasy football, there's a running back or player who just comes out of nowhere and has a monster season. And I think Williams was definitely it. Over 1,100 rush yards, 12 touchdowns on the ground, also caught 32 balls for over 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. Finished RB7 on the year. Averaged 21.3 fantasy points per game. That only trailed CMC. He had 7 games with 20 plus PPR points, and the guy only played in 12 games. That's fucking fantastic. Speaking of CMC, Williams is the only running back in the NFL with more total touches, that's carries and receptions, on a per game basis than CMC this year. Kyren had 21.7 touches a game, McCaffrey 21.2. But to be clear, volume's not the only reason Kyren Williams was an elite fantasy producer this past year. No player averaged more broken tackles per game than Kyren Williams this season. So you combine that with his almost 800 rushing yards before contact this year and his ability to make people miss consistently, you have recipe for fantasy stardom. I love him this season, or in Dynasty.
Yeah, he missed four games. It was week 7 to 11. I think their bye was in there. Yep. He was the RB4 weeks 1 through 6, and he was the RB2 weeks 12 through 17. So he produced in spite of that. It seems like every time you looked up, he was scoring a touchdown or two or three. He had a 17-game pace this year of 1,621 rushing yards and 17 touchdowns. That's just ridiculous. There's not much behind him in terms of competition for touches coming out of the backfield. The question is, who are they going to bring in? He's not the biggest dude in the world. He goes about 5'9", a buck 94. I can't really see him holding up to a 300 carry season. So there is going to be somebody brought in to help shoulder the load a little bit. I think the big question is going to be just how much do they eat into his workload? I can't imagine it's going to be a whole hell of a lot. One of the big things that surprised me just watching him over the course of the season is just how often they just ran his ass up the gut despite his size. And he was effective.
He was. Yeah. Is he a 1 year wonder, or is it a preview of things to come? I think he's definitely going to be given first round consideration this summer, and he deserves every ounce of that hype, I believe.
For sure. So now we are moving along. Blue, this one's for you, brother. Buffalo Bills running back James Cook. We got him in tier 3, number 15 running back on our list. He was a borderline running back 1 this season. In terms of point per game, he was a mid-level running back 2. He had 2 games over 20 points, 10 games under 15. He had 3 100-yard games, only 2 games with 20 or more carries. He averaged 16 carries and 72 yards with Joe Brady, who took over, I think it was November 14th. He was averaging 12 carries for 61 prior to that. So not really a huge increase, but in fantasy football, volume is king. And anytime you can squeeze a little bit more volume out, you're going to take it. He only scored 6 touchdowns and just 2 of them on the ground. And that's really the big bugaboo with him. The 3 other running backs on that team are free agents. So, I mean, he's not going to have the backfield to himself. He's again, somebody else who, given his size, is not going to stand up to 275 carries over a season. The Bills are a team that's projected to be way over the cap next year. So that team may look very, very different. And his usage may revert just depending on who they bring in to shoulder the load with him. I know they brought in playoff Lenny this year, who didn't do a damn thing. They brought in Damian Harris, who got hurt. Lat Murray is always around looking to vulture touchdowns from somebody. And you've got running backs all over the league looking over their shoulder, especially in walk years, making sure that old Lat Murray isn't there ready to take their take money out of their pocket. Overall, I think he's a good running back. He's electric in the passing game when used correctly. It's just more a matter of getting some stability there at the offensive coordinator position and really understanding how to best unlock him, because there's a shit ton of talent there. You just need to make sure that he's being used correctly.
Yeah. I mean, the proficiency through the air you mentioned, he was 6th in yards per route run among running backs, and all the production he had is useful. He's going to be fantasy relevant asset for years to come. He's still the clear lead back, but he only saw 4 goal line carries. And you mentioned the running backs there, but you forgot to mention Josh Allen is one of those running backs. Josh Allen isn't going anywhere. Problem is, he's stealing touchdowns. Cook's still young, 24 years old. It's an age that you probably aren't looking to sell. There's also a shortage of trustworthy fantasy backs out there, but Cook's ceiling is definitely capped because of Josh Allen. If you can move him for an exchange of someone with a higher ceiling, I would consider doing it. That's my thoughts.
Excellent summary.
Wrap that up, Kyle. All right. The second half of the Detroit Lions backfield, we have David Montgomery. God, I love him. We have him in tier four, 19th overall, finished RB 17, missed three games, and then got hurt in that second quarter, that other one against
Tampa Bay game.
Tampa Bay, yep. His best ability is breaking tackles. He's always been able to do it through his whole career, even in college. He's just one of the slower running backs in the league, unfortunately. He's a 4.63 speed. He did average 4.6 yards per carry. He just scored a lot of fantasy points because he had 13 touchdowns.
Career high.
So, yep, career high touchdowns, career high yards per carry. The pass game, obviously, we saw goes to Gibbs. Bonnie only had 24 targets all season. He's 27 years old. He's still got 3 to 4 years left. I think Gibbs will probably take on a larger role next season, but I think Bonnie's still an excellent complement beside him. The bad thing, that, like I said, the touchdowns, if you remove those Montgomery's touchdowns, he would have hit double-digit fantasy points in just four games this season. So,
I don't know if we remove touchdowns though.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if he's going to be as good in 24 as he was in 23. I don't think that makes him an automatic, you know, automatic sell option. I say hang on to him. Get the touchdowns when they come.
Yeah, I'm fine having him on my team for next year, just given his age, and we're looking at this from a dynasty perspective, so it's not necessarily just next year, but, you know, a couple, 2-3 years after that. Not the greatest asset. If you're in a dynasty startup and you're going to try and win now, absolutely, he's as steady as they come. That Tampa Bay game was the only game where he played the entire game and scored under 10 points. But he didn't play a whole game. That made completely no sense. We'll edit that out in post. he had a career low, 16 receptions for 117 yards. And coming into the season, I was really expecting a little bit more out of him in the passing game. But, you know, with just how dynamic Jahmyr Gibbs has been and the plethora of pass targets there in Detroit, it just didn't really work out for him. The team context is great. The offensive line is elite. The offense itself is elite. He's got a very defined role. He's a super steady guy. I'm thrilled to death to have him as my RB2. And he's a dude who has, you know, 25 point upside, maybe a couple times per season, but he's going to be hovering right around, you know, 12, 15, 17 points per week. And that's money in the bank right there.
Yep.
So next up, we are heading down to Nashville, Tennessee. Tajay Spears. And he's someone, it was kind of interesting going through the research on him. He was not a week-to-week starter. He was somebody who flashed here and there. He only had two games over 15 points. He had 11 games under 10 points. He played 53% of snaps, but he only had 24% of the attempts, and that was because of Derrick Henry. Chances are Derrick Henry ain't going to be around no more. He only had one game over 10 carries. He went 16 for 75 against the Colts. He's excellent in pass pro, and that's going to help his ability to stay on the field, you know, competing with whoever else they bring in for next year. The offensive line is kind of middling when it comes to run blocking. I think if he rises, it's going to coincide with Will Levis rising because they're going to be able to take pressure off of each other. I think next year he might push for 150 to 175 attempts. I think that's probably the ceiling on him. He's not the type of back that you just hand the backfield to.
Yeah. I think he played at a smaller school. I think he went to Tulane, I think.
Yep.
If I'm right. But he's got an impressive skill set, which really he showed off in the passing game with Tennessee. His 52 receptions were good enough to be 11th among all running backs in the NFL. There was plenty of times he actually outsnapped Derrick Henry as well. And it appears Derrick Henry is on his way out. So I believe it's all systems go for Spears. His price is, you know, rising quickly right now in Dynasty. It's probably tempting to probably cash in now when the value, as his value skyrockets. But given the role that he's looking to step into next season, he could be a top tier running back asset for far less than you'd wish that you'd sell him a year from now.
For sure. I've got some concerns about that offense as a whole. There's not really much talent at wide receiver. They got Treylon Burks, right, but he can't keep his ass on the field. Will Levis is still kind of an unknown and incredibly raw. So, it's going to be a situation to watch. I think you're going to be able to get him, you know, fairly cheap as well.
Yeah. Oh, next we got Mr. James Conner, Arizona Cardinals. RB18, he finished right between Monty and KW3. We have him in our tier 5, 31st overall. He missed four games in the middle of the season, but he was hot the last 3 weeks of the season, or the end of the season. Three games of 20 plus fantasy points. I don't know if he's at the stage in his career next season. Jeez, how old is he? He'll be age 29 next season. I don't know if he's already done being a major producer for fantasy or not. I think the one-year ceiling is sky high, and I think his dynasty floor is absolutely zero. So we'll see. There's a potential out, I think, in his contract that would only cost him about $3 million if they wanted to move on from him in the offseason. So we'll see. He is still great at breaking tackles, though, at his age. He led all qualified running backs by breaking a tackle once every 7.7 carries, beating out like Etienne, Najee Harris, Gibbs, and Jerome Ford.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise with his season for me was he averaged 5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Which was just unbelievable. The line there in Arizona is no bueno. They had subpar quarterback play for a good portion of the season while they were waiting for Kyler Murray to come back. Look, he missed four games, but he gets very consistent opportunities. He went for 1,000 yards. He scored 7 touchdowns. He's not going to do anything out of the backfield. So he's definitely the kind of back who's much more valuable in standard leagues as opposed to PPR or half PPR. But he was a league winner, absolutely went off at the end of the season. If you had him, you were thrilled. He scored 5 touchdowns the last 5 games of the year. He had 300-yard games in there. He was great. He finished out the year strong. He's only got an $8.4 million cap hit next year, which is very reasonable, but just given his age and the relatively low sum of the $3 million dead cap hit, I wouldn't be surprised if they moved on from him. But there's also not a whole hell of a lot there. And if they can get 80% of the production next year that they got out of him this year, I think they'd be pretty happy with that.
Agreed.
Well, Blue, we kept you waiting, brother. And now here we are. Raiders running back Zamir White. The good. Started 4 games last year. Averaged 21 carries, 99 yards, and he scored a touchdown. Pretty damn good. The good is over. Now to the bad. He's already torn both ACLs. He's going to be 25 next season, so he's an older dude given his time in the league. Josh Jacobs is going to be gone. I can't really see them handing the backfield over to him. He's somebody who struggles in pass pro. I think if he was the Thunder component of a Thunder and Lightning backfield, to use an incredibly worn out cliche, I think he'd be fine there. He's fine for first and second down. But when you look at the games that he had, and, you know, looking at that 21 carries for 99 yards, look at who he played. The Chiefs, the Chargers, the Broncos, and the Colts. I think I could average 4.5 yards a carry against those run defenses. You know, so I understand why some folks will have some optimism, but I'm here to pour a little bit of cold water on it. I think he's going to be given an opportunity there in Las Vegas, but he's not a three-down back. He'll be a first and second down back only. And like I said, he's already jacked up both of his knees, so durability could be a concern there. And even in his limited opportunities, both earlier in the season and in the 2022 season, it's not like he really did anything to impress. I think if he remains fantasy relevant next year, it'll be because of a lack of other options there in the Las Vegas backfield, as opposed to him just being some kind of stud and dominating.
Yeah, he's another one like Connor who may have helped some folks win some fantasy championships with his performance there in the late season as well. Yeah, I don't. I guess the time to send some trade offers to chance to land White, especially if he becomes a starter, but his value is going to skyrocket if that is to occur. I suppose I fucked that up, but it's better to buy low now on him. But to have him inside my top 20 fantasy backs for next season, I can't confidently say that.
No, so. I think his ceiling is a low end running back. You know, maybe RB20.
This is outrageous slander. Jeez. You like this cat a lot, or are you a Raiders fan too, Blue? I know
you can't be a Bills fan and a Raiders fan. That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. And listen, Blue, this time next year, one of us is going to be right and one of us is going to be wrong. And if I had to bet money on it, only one of us is on a podcast talking about this cat. The other one's sitting on the sidelines in the comments talking all that shit. I ain't saying I'm an expert, but I ain't saying I'm not either.
All right, let's switch gears. We got our
hold tight on, Blue's net. Still talking. I know you like tight ends just as much as Buff and every other guy in the world does, but we'll get there. He thinks Jacobs walks and Antonio Pierce loves White. Jacobs ain't gonna be there next year because they ain't gonna pay his ass. No. And they're smart not to do it. And when you look at, and I think we touched on this like during the regular season and even in the preseason last year, when you look at running backs that get just a massive workload like that, like Josh Jacobs had a couple years ago, like Derrick Henry had a couple years ago, and even going back to that other dickhead whose name I'm not gonna remember, and DeMarco Murray. You know, he had 350 odd carries or whatever the hell it was. It's downhill from there.
Yeah.
In terms of total yardage, in terms of efficiency on a per carry basis, that's a beating.
Yeah. Yep. So that wraps up running backs. We got our dynasty tight end rankings up on the screen. We got Laporta at one, followed by Trey McBride, Kincaid, and Pitts round out tier one. And then there's a bunch of garbage names at the end there in tier six. I don't even need to show them to you because, well, they're on there. It's on the website. Check it out. But, you know, right now.
And there's no pro Lions bias in our rankings, by the way.
No.
It's just you've got Gibbs and Laporta who were rookies this year, who are finalists for the rookie of the year. Now, neither of them are going to win it because that's just going to CJ Stroud, and rightfully so. He came in and just put balls on chins all season long. You're talking about a rookie who only throws five picks. That shit's unheard of.
Yeah.
First of all, Sam Laporta. Best rookie year of tight end ever. Just absolutely fantastic. 86 grabs, 889 yards, 10 touchdowns off 120 targets. Half a dozen games over 15 points. He had seven games under 10. But he was a top five fantasy tight end 9 weeks this year as a rookie. And you just do not see that at that position. And I think back to a couple of years ago when Kyle Pitts come in and he had that 1,000 yards as a rookie and scored once. And then he's not really done dick since. And you know, we'll see if things change with what's-his-nuts taking over there in Atlanta. Laporta was third amongst tight ends in target percentage. He garnered 20.9% of team targets. He was fifth overall in targets. He was second in broken tackles. Again, great team context, fantastic chemistry with Goff. And the Lions offense will look a little bit different every year or next year. You know, we're all hearing about Ben Johnson probably going to the Commies, which, you know, good for him, kind of sucks for Detroit, but with so much talent on that team and just especially the way the offense is built and they built the team the right way. They started with the offensive line, the foundation of your offense. Laporta is going to be fantastic for years to come. And he's a no doubt top of tier one, number one overall tight end for dynasty.
Yeah. He should be and will be the first tight end selected in 99.9% of fantasy drafts this season. It's safe to say that he has arrived as an every week no-brainer for the foreseeable future. The only thing I'd like to see him improve upon is his receiving yard average. He was 52.3 yards a game. I'd like to see that go a little bit up. And his yards per target, he was 7.4. I'd like to see that go up a little bit. But fantastic season to the young man. Thank God Kirk Ferentz just keeps churning out fucking awesome tight ends at the University of Iowa. Hockenson who?
No kidding. So in drafts next year, where are you drafting Laporta? Would you take him in the second round?
I would.
No kidding.
No thought about it at all. No homer bias, nothing. I mean,
that's fair. You know, in years past, we've seen Travis Kelce go in the first round, but he was also putting up, you know, wide receiver one numbers at tight end. I think Laporta can get over 1,000 yards next year. I think, you know, touchdowns will be roughly the same. Maybe he finishes with 8. Maybe he finishes with 11. I think he's going to be somewhere in that range, you know, probably close to 90, 95 receptions. Hopefully he can be a little bit more efficient on a per catch basis. And I'd like to see him get some more yak, do a little bit more after the catch. But, you know, again, he's a rookie, and all these opportunities we're talking about, we're really nitpicking here.
We are. Tight end is, you know, you got quarterbacks, the hardest position, but tight end is up there on hard positions to learn for rookies. A lot of things, you're involved in the run game as well as the passing game. And he's a smart cat. And yeah, I look for him just to get that more experience, a little bit smarter, learn. And he's just going to unleash himself on the NFL. Next, we got another fine young running back, or sorry, tight end. Jeez, I'm fucking up here. Arizona Cardinals tight end Trey McBride. We have him in tier one as well, second overall currently. Finishes tight end 7 from week 8 to the end of the fantasy season, which is week 17. Shout out, Matt. No tight end earned a higher target share than McBride at 26.4. He's the only tight end over that stretch over 25%. The season got off to a slow start for him. Then Zach Ertz got hurt, went on IR with that quad injury, and McBride caught fire. From week 8 on, he was tight end 3 in PPR scoring. He averaged 6.6 catches and 65.5 receiving yards per game. He became the go-to ball catcher there on an offense that is very thin on talent at the wide receiver position. It's a damn good bet that the Cardinals bring in some new blood at wide receiver, so that could cut into his target total next season. But he's very talented. I figure he'll still be a high-end fantasy tight end for years to come. He'll definitely be one of the first 10 tight ends off the board next season.
Oh, for sure. He was fantastic the last half of the season. You know, and part of it was due to necessity. You had Hollywood Brown, who was hurt, and you got Rondale Moore, who's just not somebody you're really going to rely on a game-to-game basis.
If you look at Greg Dortch?
Greg Dortch, who had like that one good game. if you look at his numbers and compare him to Laporta, they're very, very similar, other than one key thing, and that's touchdowns. McBride only scored 3 of them. I think the biggest or most surprising thing from Trey McBride, that dude is fast as hell.
Yeah, he's quick. I mean, he is.
That dude moves. I would be absolutely thrilled to have him on my team. I think he can come close to replicating last season's numbers in terms of catches and yardage. And I do look for there to be some improvement in the touchdown category as well. You know, just depending on who gets brought in. I know right now word around a campfire is that Marvin Harrison will probably end up going there to Arizona with a very good chance that quarterbacks go top 3 in the draft.
Heck yeah.
So now we're going to talk about a tight end on a team who is eliminated from the playoffs because they suck, and that is Jake Ferguson of the Dallas Cowboys. He was another, you know, borderline tight end one this season, just depending on how big your league is, averaged a little over 10 points per game. He had two games over 15 points, 8 under 10. He had 9 TE1 finishes in a 12-team league. He was 7th in targets, got over 100 of them with 102. You know, he was a guy who averaged 4 for 44 on a per-game basis, found the end zone 5 times. There's a good chance that he's going to be the number 2 target there in Dallas next year if they decide to move on from Brandon Cooks. On the season, 71 grabs, 761 yards, again, those 5 touchdowns. He's somebody who there is definitely room for upside in those numbers, and Dak really took that next step this season as a quarterback, and certainly CeeDee Lamb was a big part of that, but Jake Ferguson was a solid part of that offense too, considering the disappointment that was Tony Pollard. He really stepped up to help to take up some of that slack.
He did. Yeah, he was, his average draft position was like tight end 25 in PPR leagues. He ended up finishing, like you said, tight end 9. Pretty nice catch rate, respectable 69.6 for a tight end. 0 fumbles, held on to the ball all year. He did lead the position in red zone targets. It's surprising he only had just 5 touchdowns. He totaled more than Kittle and Ingram combined in red zone targets and was 7th in total targets among tight ends with 96. He's a very good blocker too, so he's going to be on the field. I don't know if there'll be a huge statistical improvement, if there's much room for that, he'll be a prominent part of that passing attack next season for sure. I think there's a lot of folks still not believing in him for whatever reason, but I think he's a solid hold in Dynasty.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's in tier 2. We've got him number 10 overall.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he finishes next year as the tight end 8. Maybe he finishes as the tight end 12. You know, and when we have these rankings again, and I know we talked about it at the top of the show, like there's some fluidity in there just based on what happens across the offseason. But when it comes to Ferguson, the talent is there. They've got a solid O-line there in Dallas, and you know, like I was saying a minute ago, Dak has really stepped up his play. So, you know, I'm looking for good things out of him next year. And if you're somebody who likes to wait on tight end, he is a fantastic target.
Yeah. Headed up to Green Bay, tight end Luke Musgrave. Got hurt during the middle of the season. I know he missed like week 12 to 17 with a lacerated kidney. He was averaging 7.3 PPR points before he got hurt. We have him in tier 3, 16th overall. Guy's rangy, guy's athletic, and he's a big boy. He's 6'6", 253. He was definitely a bright spot for the Packers this year. He's developing pretty quickly, and he's got great QB play. So he gets to play with Jordan Love, another rising star. The only other concern I have for Musgrave is last year they drafted another tight end, Tucker Kraft, who also flashed as a rookie. I think Musgrave profiles as a mid-range tight end too in fantasy drafts, but he could come on fast. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and that's really my big concern with him too. You're exactly right. Having Kraft there who you know, represented himself well, there's a good chance they're going to cannibalize production from one another. And you got to remember, this is an offense on the rise with all those good young wide receivers. That's a lot of mouths to feed there. Mm-hmm. And chances are, you know, tight end may be a little bit further down the list. You know, he missed the 6 games. He only had 2 games over 10 points. His 17-game pace was 56 for 580 and 2 touchdowns. And you definitely want to see more in the touchdown department from your tight end. But considering where you're going to be able to get him,
yeah,
you know, there's some decent value there with an opportunity for a little bit of upside as well. And now we're going to move on to this old-ass jabroni that can't keep his ass on the field, Darren Waller. And I'll be the first to raise my hand and say, you know what, preseason, I was kind of hype about him. I thought, okay, you know, here's an opportunity for him going to New York to lead his team in targets. And anytime you can get that out of a tight end, especially a tight end who was going, you know, tight end 7, tight end 8 off the board, something like that.
5th or 6th.
That's a lot of upside.
I saw 5th or 6th round a lot for sure.
Yep. You know, he missed the 5 games due to injury, to the surprise of absolutely no one. He's going to be 32 next year. I'm not really looking to invest in that offense as a whole. There's a reason he's the tight end 19 on our board. He only had four games over 10 points. Two of those were over 15 points, you know, so credit to him. It seemed like he and Tyrod Taylor had a little bit of chemistry there. Averaged just under 10 points a game. And really, when you're looking at tight ends, especially in this range, you know, if you can find somebody who gets you 4 for 40 and then just falls to the ground in a PPR, I'll take the 8 points and be happy with it. I'm generally not somebody who invests in tight ends super early in the draft. I don't want to pay that high premium for such a volatile position. Look, Darren Waller is going to be relevant mainly in two tight end leagues or as a bye week fill-in, but chances are if you've got him slated to be your bye week fill-in, his ass might be on IR.
Yeah.
He's ranked because we at least wanted to do, you know, our due diligence and at least give you a couple dozen guys to choose from. But Darren Waller, even being ranked at number 19 in tier four, I think is kind of generous. It really is going to come down to how Daniel Jones does next season coming back from injury. And again, you know, not to beat a dead horse, Waller's ass can't stay on the field.
No, he can't. You mentioned going to be age 32 season, missed 19 games over the last three seasons and only 6 touchdowns. He's signed through 26. They do have an out there in New York after in 24. It'd be a $14 million cap hit if they keep him. But if they release him, it's half that, like a $7.8 million cap hit. So maybe they move on for them. But yeah, we had to put him somewhere on here, right? I mean, he had that amazing season in 2020, over 100 catches, just short of 1,200 yards. I think he scored 8, 9, 10 times. Just fantastic, but he just can't stay healthy. He just can't.
Louis Hayes is done talking shit, looking to contribute to the conversation now. He likes Chigi Okonkwo, and I like him too. This is number 20.
Tier 4, number 20.
You didn't really need to pull that up onto the screen, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I was trying to show him where we had him.
It's on the website.
Well, I wanted to show him.
But anyways, I like Chigi Okonkwo, too. He's somebody who, like, he's got all the athleticism, and I think if he can really build that chemistry with Will Levis there, then there's a chance he sneaks up and ends up as a back-end tight end one next year, high-end tight end two. And you're going to be able to get them for cheap.
Oh, yeah. Last tight end, we're going to dive deep. Yeah, the last tight end we're going to dive deep about. Jeez, am I stroking out? Not sure. This guy was either scored nothing or scored something. So 7 games with 4.3 fantasy points or less. Had 5 games of 12.3 or more. Had a couple 20-plus games. We have him at tier 5, 26th overall. He doesn't play enough, you know. On offense, he played 425 snaps, 38% of the snaps, and he did special teams, 37% of the snaps. Let's get this the fuck out the way right now. Taysom Hill is not a tight end. Jesus Murphy, his position listed on Pro Football Reference is QB, but he's not a QB either. He had 6 completions on 11 attempts for 83 yards and a touchdown, ran the ball 81 times for over 400 yards and 4 touchdowns, and also had 40 targets, 33 receptions, 291 and 2 touchdowns. His base salary last season was just over $1 million. Next season, it's projected to be $10 million. He's not fucking worth that. He's going to be age 34 season next year. I just don't see the long-term value there. And there's going to be a new Lux Saints offense again because Pete Carmichael got fired. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And Dubo, you read my mind. I've had Hill on my bench so many times, never started him in the right game. The definition of boomer bust. From week 6 to 9, he was the tight end too. And so my advice to anybody who drafts Taysom Hill or sees him on waivers and decides to pick him up is this. If you see him have a good game, start him the following week because he is incredibly streaky. He has a 3 or 4 week run every season where he just looks like a damn world beater. Like, he's just going to carry your team to the playoffs, and then he just falls off the face of the earth again to give you 4.8 points on average for the next 5 weeks.
Yeah. And he was most effective when they were up or tied. They used him a lot more to keep the clock running, blah, 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 when they were behind, which they were a lot this season in New Orleans because, you know, Derek Carr. It's just, I don't think you'll be there next year, honestly.
I don't either. And it's funny because you look at his contract and all the incentives are tied to quarterback play and passing yards and everything. And, you know, they weren't going to give him the opportunity to throw the ball that many times. I mean, he started a couple games, and while he wasn't just complete ass, he didn't really inspire confidence either. I imagine he'll catch on somewhere just because of his versatility and what he can do. You know, he's a better than competent rusher at the goal line just because of his size and strength. And the fact that he can throw the ball. So you know, if you've got him there in taking snaps, 2 yard line, 3 yard line, something like that, you've got to respect the run and the pass. And there is some benefit to that. And there's some value to what he brings, but not $10 million worth of value.
Absolutely not. Sweet. We hope you guys got some information out of that. Like Matt said, we'll be updating those rankings as the season progresses or as the year progresses.
I imagine, you know, we'll probably do something like after the draft, you know, once we see where these rookies are coming in and where they land. And
free agency. See what
we'll have free agency starting here, and we'll call it 2 months, a little bit less, something like that.
Heck yeah. All right. Let's talk about the conference championships going on this weekend. There's only 3 NFL games remaining in this season. Home teams have dominated the closing round of the conference playoffs in recent memory. Since we expanded to 32 teams in 2002, home teams are 29-13 straight up this round. Over the past 10 years, pretty robust record for the home team, 16-4. But that's not going to happen this time, right, Matt? Because the fucking Lions are going to Santa Clara and beating the snot out of the 40 fucking Niners.
God, I hope so. And by 1 or 100, a win is a win. I'm not going to let fandom cloud my judgment. They're an underdog for a reason.
Sure.
I fully expect them to cover the 7-point spread according to DraftKings. I think it's going to be a closer game than a lot of people expect. And we kind of touched on this a little bit as we were talking about the divisional games. Like, the Packers kind of gave a little bit of a blueprint on how to attack that Niners defense, especially on the ground. I think in order for Detroit to really have a legitimate shot, this needs to be a Jahmyr Gibbs game, something to the tune of 20 touches, maybe a few more. And, you know, look, Monty's going to have his role there, but the San Francisco defense is much tougher up the middle than they are on the edge. ARSB is going to get his. Laporta is going to get his. But those linebackers there in San Francisco, they're pretty damn good.
They are.
Fred Warner there and Greenlaw, and I forget the other dickhead's name. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I think this could be a sneaky JMO game too. I think if he can get loose for one, we're going to have a game. It's going to be a game anyway. I'm really looking forward to this. The last time the Lions made it this far in the playoffs, I was 12 years old and had just figured out that jerking off was a thing. And you know, now here I am as a grown ass man, and I'm fully competent in that department. And plus, I get to see my squad here playing for the right to go to the Super Bowl. Michigan just won a natty. Like, it's been a great few weeks as a Detroit and Michigan football fan, you know, state of Michigan. But I'm not ready to get off this ride yet.
I am not either. To dive a little deeper there on why you think it's going to be a Gibbs game, I do too. The San Francisco defense, it's good overall, but they can be attacked on the edges. The 49ers have allowed 4.6 yards to running backs off their either their tackle or their edge, 24th in the league. In the divisional round, the Packers smacked them. They rushed 10 times on those runs for 99 yards. On the interior, like you mentioned, they're a lot tougher guard to guard on the interior. They have allowed 3.9 yards per carry to running backs, 12th in the league. When Green Bay tried running in the interior 12 times for 25 yards, so it did not work. In the postseason so far, Gibbs has had 12 of those type of outside runs compared to Monty's 9, with both active. With them both active since week 10, Gibbs has had 66 of those runs compared to 50. So it's not like Monty can't do it, but he is one of the slower backs in the league. I agree. This is going to be a Gibbs game. Gibbs has had 6 touchdowns on those outside runs compared to Monty's 1. This is the way to keep San Francisco's offense off the field. Don't know if Debo's going to play. I don't know if it matters if Brandon Ayuk is going to be able to fucking tear apart this Detroit Lions secondary if Purdy has a decent game.
Yeah, we got Blue EAs chiming in. What are your takes on veneers? He thinks they look like wooden teeth. Like, share a little like story
George
with you.
Like George Washington wooden teeth, like that kind of thing.
So Blue, way back in the day, shot a short film down here in Indianapolis before I relocated. And then afterwards, me and a buddy, we had to swing over to a town in Southern Ohio. He was going to pick up his daughters and take them back home. And their people were from West Virginia. And we get to, I don't know, it was like McDonald's or something like that. And we make the exchange. Oh, God, that makes it sound like human trafficking. Anyways. So I'm looking at the girls' family or whatever, and I see some kind of goofy looking teeth. I'm like, all right, you know, you don't have dental insurance or whatever. And but there was something that just stuck with me. And so I asked afterwards, I was like, hey dude, what's up with their teeth? And the reply I was given was that, now mind you, this was 2007, wooden false teeth. And I don't understand how. Number one, that's even still a thing.
Yeah.
How do you clean them?
I don't know.
You know, you soak them in bleach.
I'm good.
And I imagine like whatever you're eating, like, you know, the taste is going to stay with it. Regular dentures are made of plastic or whatever the hell, but you know, wood will absorb flavors and all that shit. Like,
right.
You know, imagine eating a burger and you got a lot of onion on there and then you're just tasting that onion for the next week.
Yeah. Plus, like, you know, wood and wetness in your mouth, like that doesn't seem like that's going to make them last very long. But Dubo wants to know if Laporta is practicing. Heard he's hurt. Yeah, he hurt himself in that the first playoff game, but he played last week and played well. And if from my knowledge, they're just giving him time off for that. He'll play this weekend, no doubt.
He was out there today. He got hurt in week 18, and I know people were kind of shitty about it because it was, you know, a meaningless game in some people's view, but like that was just kind of a freak thing.
I'm very interested. We're going to go over here, guys. I don't care. I'm very interested in the Ben Johnson, Kyle Shanahan play calling. What happens this weekend? Obviously, it's not against one another. You know what I'm saying? But it'll be interesting to see what these guys do this week.
Hell yeah. Dubo's got the right thought there, too. They're going to pull out all the stops. It's win or go home.
Yep.
I cannot even begin to describe the state of pure elation that I would be in if the Lions make it to the Super Bowl because,
Tuesday's episode is just going to be me and Matt on here cheesing the whole time.
Right. Or shitty as hell.
Or
we're just going to abuse the audience. So prepare yourselves. We're going to take our frustrations out on all of you.
So the Chiefs got to go on the road again, headed to Baltimore, the number one seed. Baltimore's outscored everybody in the playoffs so far by 13.8 a game, but 0.8 a game. So a couple touchdowns. Definitely this game is, I think, going to be all about the defenses. Top two defenses in the NFL this season. Ravens and Chiefs are first and second in points allowed per game. Chiefs are allowing a league low 2.9 yards or 2.9. Jeez, I cannot say. A league low 2.9 scoring plays per game. Ravens are second at 3.2 scoring plays per game. The difference between those defenses is the turnover department. Baltimore is fucking awesome at it. They're tied with San Francisco. Hey, they're all in the fucking conference championship games. Imagine that. With a league best plus 12 turnover differential. Kansas City, 29th at minus 12. The worst of the four playoff teams. The offenses aren't bad either. Ravens are fourth in yards per play. The Chiefs are ninth in yards per play and 10th in points per drive. The key to this game is going to be Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, I guess that probably seems fucking stupid to say, but it definitely is.
It's a pretty hot take there.
You know, Steve Spagnuolo is going to try and stop him. In the three games that he has faced Steve Spagnuolo, he has rushed for 846 and 1, 983 and 0 touchdowns, and 16, 107 and 2 touchdowns. And a lot of those yards, most of them came on designed runs. Don't think for a minute that Baltimore did not see Josh Allen successfully running all over the Chiefs for the second fucking time this season. He rushed 12 times for 72 yards and 2 touchdowns. Guess who's 29th on the season in rushing yards allowed per game to quarterbacks? The Kansas City Chiefs. I got the Ravens in this one.
I think so too. And I think they cover the 4. And selfishly, and you know, this probably isn't the most intelligent take. I'm rooting for Baltimore just because I'm tired of seeing Taylor Swift. I don't give a shit what she's doing up in the suite and dancing around. She's a talented artist, good songwriter, very successful, blah, blah, blah. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit at all. And as somebody who's been a fan of the Patriots as well as the Lions over the past couple decades, like, I understand the fatigue that comes with seeing the same teams there constantly. And now I'm getting to appreciate the other side of that coin.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of tired of seeing the chefs there. And here's something, and I forget the guy's name. The referee for that game has over the course of his career, a bias towards road teams. He calls more penalties against home teams. So I don't know, you know, what exactly the writers are doing there for that game. I think it's going to be interesting. Honestly, I could see Baltimore winning this one by 10, maybe even 2 touchdowns. Like the Kansas City offense just is not what it's been in years past.
It's been better recently, but overall this season, you are correct.
You know, and a lot of it is due to a lack of talent, especially at wide receiver. Rashee Rice had a nice little rookie year for him. And you know, we talked earlier this week, we're kind of high on him going into next season, just depending on how things kind of shake out there and who they bring in to help, because they're going to bring in people to help. But I think we're going to end up with a rematch from earlier this season, with the Baltimore Ravens in the Super Bowl, and then the NFC also sending a team to the Super Bowl. Yeah. You know, Baltimore slapped the shit out of both of them.
They did.
But now it's for everything. And you know what? I'm going to let my Homer bias take over. I think it's going to be Ravens and Lions in the Super Bowl, and I'm going to be happy as a pig and shit come Tuesday. And I'm going to be thrilled to celebrate with all of you as well. It's going to be just a fantastic time.
I'm giddy. I was just going to bring up that ref shit. Now the Lions 49ers game is Cleet Blakeman, and the Lions are 1-4 in games that he is officiated. The one that really comes to mind is the ghost illegal hands to the face one. Was that the Packers? No.
Yeah. And he called it on Trey Flowers.
Yeah, and you know, the replay was obvious, and the league, of course, on Monday also acknowledged that it was wrong, which does not make you feel one fucking ounce better. We should have had that fucking game. So I just hope Cleet Blakeman don't fuck us. But like you said, the best we could hope for is some rain.
Yes, absolutely. Let's mix in some weather.
Not that I want to see Jared Goff have to put on a glove or anything and try and throw. I don't want to see that, but I think both teams are built for the rain, but Purdy's got teeny tiny hands. Yes,
he can't be able to grip the ball.
Oh, God. Heck fucking yeah.
Well, I think that's going to put a bow on things for this week.
Oh, any update on the hats? Well, if you guys, if we know how many we need to order, we'll get them. And there'll be a fee, obviously, $20 or whatever it is. I'm not sure. But if
I got
all
four
you guys
of them sitting right here next to me. Of course, one's for Kyle, but we've got three more that we're willing to part with. So if you're interested,
email us,
down in the description. The email is down in the description, and we'll figure out some way for an exchange of funds, and we'll get your address and get that sent out to you. They're really cool hats, if I do say so myself.
Yep. The email address is stonedonsports1, the number one, @gmail.com. All right. That does it for us tonight. Matt, you got anything else? You good?
Oh, you're actually going to let me speak at the end of the episode this time? Thanks, Kyle. It's mighty kind of you.
You have my permission.
All right. No, I think that's going to put a wrap on things. Kyle and I are both eagerly anticipating Sunday evening at 6:38 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be a long couple days to get there, but damn, is it so going to be worth it? Big thanks to everybody that come and hang out with us this week and tonight and really always. We'll be back next week. We're going to be diving back into some baseball, starting off, I think, our first base position preview, but I could be completely wrong about that. So maybe I'll edit that one out in post as well.
I think you're right as well. Still be talking some football, fantasy football all the time as well. What else? Fuck. That's it, folks. I knew I had something else, but now I can't remember it. So have a good night, everybody. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Tell your friends. Share us on social media. Dubo, I appreciate you always interacting on Twitter with us. Share us, man. We need the help. We need to get this show getting a little bigger.
Don't beg. It's unbecoming. Have a great night, everybody.
Peace.